Joining us now is BofA Global Research co-head of China Equity Research and head of APAC Basic Materials Oil and Gas Research, Matty Zhao. I'm sure you've been very busy. When it comes to the conversation about the Strait of Hormuz and this whole reset that Asia really needs to have in terms of energy security, where are we right now and what assumptions are you making?
Sure. I would say that actually this impact from Middle East has been last longer than previously expected. So far, if according to the IEA data, the oil disruption has more than 10%, since March of the tensions. And we are also seeing for the Asia, it's probably the biggest impact as well, because like Korea, like Japan, like Singapore, it is 100% reliant on energy imports. And it doesn't have like the coal buffer like what China and India does as well. So it's probably most vulnerable in the near term. While on the other hand, Australia, even though it's a big energy hub, but it's 90% depending on the diesel because it's lacking of processing capacities as well. While a lot of the Asian country, because of lacking of the oil, so they have been cutting exports, like for example for China, etc. So Australia is also having some issues in terms of the diesel providings as well. So I would say that overall Asia, 60% of the oil come from the Middle East and 80% of the oil is actually relying on import. So it's quite big impact from here.
China, though, seems to be looking a bit better. I mean, just given the fact that they've hoarded a lot of commodities over the years, in terms of stockpiles and the like, you know, how resilient do you think China is to these energy shocks now?
Yeah, so I would say China is probably most resilient out of all the Asian countries. So first of all, China's energy dependency is only 20% compared to the region of between 40 to 100%. And then also we have large piles of oil and then also have excess capacity of coal-fired power capacity as well. So even to the extreme, we probably can turn to more coal. In terms of the EV penetrations, China is also the highest, right? China is about 50% penetrated compared to India and Japan, only 2% EV penetration. So it's also, and China has a very, I would say, full chain in terms of the chemical productions, in terms of ESS, in terms of the battery supply chain and the solar supply chain as well.
What about feedstock, though? Things like ethane, naphtha. I think Japan and China are very reliant on imports. Mm. How likely are we to actually see this feed into maybe slower manufacturing PMI?
Sure. We actually see, yes, feedstock has been quite tight. So we are starting to see, for example, Japan and Korea's utilization rate in the chemical has been cut. So take Korea as an example. Their utilization rate compared to like pre-war has already dropped 14% from the chemical plants. So if this situation lasts and if inventory run down further and further, we see there is a further closure as well or suspensions. For China, yes, also utilization rate, especially for the teapot has dropped largely between 10 to 20% on the utilization rates. So China's temporary stopped export of some of the chemical products, which also causing like...
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130。
Australia's tightness in diesel, etc., on those as well. So if the situation continue to last, probably for China, we can turn to more coal chemicals. Well, at least we have the alternative.
Yeah.
While Korea and Japan, that's a bigger problems. I think we are going to see utilization rate of the chemical plants to go further down. I mean, even if Hormuz start to resume, margin-wise, because of the naphtha prices hike, a lot of the chemical margin is also going to get squeezed.
You mentioned we're close to suspension. How close are we to that point in these countries? And what is the downstream impact on other sectors that could be affected by this?
Yeah, sure. If you look at just diesel, for example, Australia, one-third of the diesel is used in the mining sectors. And using spot diesel prices versus pre-war, we basically see the the cost of like between copper, lithium, iron ore to hike between 8% to 18%, just on a production cost perspective. And then utilization rate is already down 14% in Korea for the refining and chemicals. We expect in April probably we're down another 10%. And if it doesn't resume normal in May and June, we're probably down a lot more as well, given we are now running down the inventories.
You mentioned ESS. That certainly is a very hot topic when you look at a company like CATL. China certainly has had this sort of first move advantage in this space. Do you think that they're going to continue to dominate, or do you see other players in the region really stepping up?
Well, I think other regions are also stepping up as well. However, compared to China, the rate is still slower, you can say. So currently, according based on 2025 data, China is already 55% of global's ESS installation data. And this year, year-to-date, China's ESS installation is doubling again, year-to-date. Well, Europe is quite fast at about 50%. Some of the other region is between 30 to 60% as well. But compared to the China rate, so we can say that probably China will account for 60% in the ESS installation by end of this year.
So what is the equity preferences then? I mean, can you tell us a bit more if you have to build a portfolio around this whole energy security theme in the region? How would you construct that right now?
Yeah, sure. So for the near term, of course, the implication is energy prices will be higher for longer. We like the names, for example, you have upstream oil and gas exposure like PetroChina, or that alternative that you can turn to is like coal, like Shenhua, Yankuang, who also have coal chemical as well. However, if you're looking at more long term, probably the ESS value chain. So we've been pushing lithium in a big magnitude. Lithium prices hiked from 70,000 in July last year to now 170,000, 180,000. And it is still very tight. Inventory of lithium is still at historical low level. Demand of lithium was up 50% year to date because of the doubling of ESS and also quite strong of EV as well. And of course, because of this energy crisis, we basically see electrification more important, like for example battery, right? So like CATL, for example LG Chem in Korea as well, the battery demand in the near term will also be shoot up. If we cannot resolve the energy, you can probably in the near term use more batteries just to help a little bit.
To power the world.
And then in a more longer run, I would say probably nuclear. Of course nuclear takes time, and then also power grid as well. So all these are basically like energy diversification, electrification to help to give a little bit flexibility to the Asian countries.
I want to ask about copper as well, because we have seen these the post-ceasefire rally initially was perhaps the growth concern alleviating, but now it's starting to be the supply disruptions around sulfuric acid. How tight is supply there? How reliant are we on supplies from the Gulf?
Yeah, sure. So I would say that copper is probably rally because of two things. One is because of the cost inflation I've been just talking about. But secondly, most importantly, is the sulfur acids. So we can see China's sulfur acid prices has already more than double compared to a year ago, while in Africa, a lot of the sulfur acid was between 4 to 8 times already compared to a year ago. And then more importantly, you basically cannot get sulfur acid in a lot of the African countries. So now the growing concern on whether we are going to have supply cut in Africa or in Australia. And because copper, no matter we are talking about recession or not, it's probably just 1 or 2% of the demand effects. So if we have like a low single digit supply cut because of diesel lacking or sulfur acids, that's already very important. And like I said, electrification is very important, and that's a big driver for demands.
Maddie, it's great to have you as always. Maddie Zhao there, co-head of China Equity Research and head of APAC Basic Materials, Oil and Gas Research at B of A Global.